Welcome to the Bank Marketing Show, the podcast that engages and informs you for success in today's marketplace. It's the show that will make you a better marketer with trends, tactics, and inspiration from experts and industry leaders. If you're wanting to impact your personal success and position your bank as the best choice in your market, you're in the right place. Now let's dive into today's show with your hosts, Chris and Dan.
Hey, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bank Marketing Show. I'm half of your hosts, Dan Novalis. I've got Chris Bates with me. Hello.
How's it going, Dan?
It's good. It's good. How are you?
Good. Doing very well. very, very excited about our guest and our visit today. And to kind of set the stage a little bit, a lot of our listenership knows that your agency and mine are involved in a lot of different states, different geographies, working with banks and financial institutions kind of all over the map, all over the U.S. Yeah. Recently, I was at the Community Bankers Association of Georgia conference and had the great opportunity to meet Neil Stevens, our guest today. And Neil, we're super glad to have you with us.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, guys. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, to kind of let our listenership know a little bit about you, guys, Neil is a longtime established banker and speaker and community leader. He's a brand strategist, and I knew this personally about you too, Neil, that you're a fitness enthusiast. And you and I kind of share a little bit of that as well. Neil is the president and CEO of Oconee State Bank in Georgia, and has a great visionary perspective that we're going to talk about, I think, a good bit today, that inspires growth and drives direction, helps clear opportunities create opportunities and clear obstacles for team members, and is very, very team oriented. So I'm excited about discussing some of that today. And Neil is happiest when he's surrounded by his family, looking forward to meeting some more of them coming up this fall, Neil. And your passion is to create a really positive impact on others through servant leadership. And you and I certainly have some of that, and Dan as well, some of that that mission in common as well. So, man, we're sure glad to have you with us, Neil.
Oh, man, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. It's an honor. Well,
good, good. So, Neil, the first thing that I was taken by in meeting you is at the conference, you led a panel that was with some very impressive gentlemen that were all former Georgia Bulldog players. Mm-hmm. And NFL, and you know, all of that. And you know, for a bunch of athletic, husky men types to be sitting up there and talking about connection was really impressive. And some of those guys now are very impressive business consultants and coaches and directors as well. So Neil, I'd love to maybe you set the stage for us a little bit here. Why this about connection? What's so important for us as bankers, as business people, as family people, all of the above? What is it that's so important about connection?
Well, I think when you think about what connection leads to, I mean that's the key. That's sort of the magic behind it, and what it leads to is true team engagement. And without team engagement, you know, it's very difficult to achieve any aspirational goal or dream that a company may have. It's hard to achieve anything without true engagement from a group of people. And when you think about, athletics, it's really no different. A team has to be fully engaged, committed to each other for that to happen. I recently read a statistic, and it's lower than this now, but I think back in 2021, only 34% of American workers are engaged in their work. And I think that statistic has even dropped further down in 2022. I think it's less than 30% at this point. And by no means do we have it all figured out here at our bank. We're striving every day, and we fail all the time. And we haven't always had great engagement scores, but as of late, we've been running around the 85% range. You think about 34% of an athletic team, a football team, for example. If only 34% were engaged, if I'm doing my math right, that means about only three players out of that, or very few players, would be engaged in the play. And so you will never run a successful play. So I believe the key to engagement is having a connectedness within your team. And this really, whether you're a University of Georgia Bulldog fan or not, it's not really relevant to the topic, but Coach Kirby Smart and his coaching staff have recognized this, and they've made one of their DNA traits connection. There's four DNA traits, one of those, and the main one is connection. And so sort of to answer your question, the panel there were former players and then the chaplain of the team, who's really close to the action and close to Coach Mark. They spoke about the fact that this is real, and it's not just something that they talk about, in the coaching rooms, but it really comes into play on the field. And I believe the reason it's important, to answer your question, is it really fosters a culture of engagement where everyone is playing for each other and for the good of the team, and not from a selfish, what's in it for me perspective.
You know, and we hear corporate culture, and I think some of what you're mentioning certainly touches on job satisfaction and all of those things. So there is some self benefit, you know, into being a part of a team and having real connection there from those respects. It's exemplary and it's obvious, I think, from the outside when you're engaging with a team. And Neil, before we started recording on the episode here, you know, we mentioned I've had the opportunity to engage with several of your team members from the bank over the last, two or three years at various conferences and speaking engagements and those types of things. And this is a compliment to you and your team, Neil. It's noticeable. You know, they have an external engagement as representatives of your bank that kind of make you go, wow, that's a great bunch of people. Wow, that's a, you know, and you kind of have that response, and that's not a tangible. Neil, maybe I'm off here. You tell us. I don't know that you can specifically train that. You can't, you know, but it's got to be reflective of that culture, you know, of that company culture that you're talking about. So maybe tell us a little bit more about that, or maybe about how you guys have moved that direction with your team.
Yeah, thank you for the compliments. I mean, as I said earlier, we certainly don't have it all together. We do a lot of things wrong. But at the end of the day, you know, culture is a word. I think it's, you know, obviously it's a cliche word today. It's used, and I think people don't even think about what it really means, you know, when you talk about culture. We try not to use that word within our bank, because I think when you do it well, it just automatically people know you got a really healthy culture. But it really begins with leadership. I don't think you can have, no organization can have a healthy culture if there's not sound leadership. And that just doesn't mean at the top of the organization. It certainly has to start with, you know, the CEO and the board of directors and the executive leadership team. But you also have to have, like in our case, financial center managers, or the director of loan operations, or the director of deposit operations, or our, you know, whatever department it may be, whatever supervisory role is in the bank where they're managing people, they got to be strong leaders, and they got to demand the best. They got to demand the best staff, the best team. They got to set the bar really high. I think a lot of times culture, you think about fluff, and you think about beanbag chairs and M&Ms and, you know, ping pong tables and, you know, what can we do for our people to make them feel good and stay happy and all that. And that's certainly something that is, I don't want to discount those things, but I think at the end of the day, culture is about setting a high expectation and a high bar, hiring the right people who are already motivated. You're right when you said earlier, you can't teach this. I think it just has to come organically because you've hired someone whose personal why and their personal vision aligns with the corporate why and the corporate vision of a company. And when you could do that, magic really begins to happen, in my opinion. That's where the magic begins to happen, and it just feeds on itself over time. So I think a great culture has high challenge, very high challenge and demands and goals and standards, but very high support along with that, where the team and everyone together supports one another in a way that they want what's best for each other. And when you can put those two together, I think that's where great things happen.
Yeah, I think it's you're kind of touching on like it's not just the ping pong table, right? Which is sort of a now become a, you know, cliche kind of culture thing, but it's, you know, it's kind of caring and understanding the individual people that make up the team. Right.
Absolutely.
Like somebody may need the ping pong table because they need to let off some stress at work. But another person may just say, look, I've got a family. I want to get home to them. That's more, you know, having a job where I can do that and, you know, spend time with my family and contribute to this company is what's important to me. So it's, you know, I think if you're hiring right, and you're, you know, you're focused top down on that, it spreads through for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt.
Can you talk a little more about like as you, because you've been at your bank, how long have you been at your bank?
I've been
now?
Here about 6.5 years at this bank. I've been in the business for about 34. I've been here for as CEO for about 6.5. Yep.
Okay. So you've seen, I mean, that's a tumultuous 6.5 years through COVID and whatnot. Can you talk a little about like just that, how driving culture, you know, how those like individual factors have maybe changed over the last couple of years? Like we had an episode a few weeks ago around recruiting and staffing and just how that's changed. But curious to hear how, like, you know, a lot of banks have folks that can work from home, branch traffic's different. Like, how is that culture building, team building stuff changed?
Oh, yeah. You know, you raise such good points, and that is that the landscape of businesses, you know, it's constantly changing. It's ever evolving. You know, you go back to my day, back in the late 80s when I started to work in banking, it was expected that you show up in your white shirt and your red tie and your, you know, blue suit every day. And when you leave your office, you put your coat on and, you know, you're always in the office. And if you never challenged anything, you know, your boss would say, you know, you do this because we're told to, and just don't ask questions. Mm. And obviously today, if we required white shirts and blue suits and ties and in that type of environment, no one would work for us. I mean, we wouldn't have anybody here. So I think you have to be adaptable. It doesn't mean that the standards or the pursuit of excellence changes. Absolutely not. In fact, you know, we talk about this all the time. Any company worth its weight, they're always trying to get better, no matter how good they are. They're always trying to get better every single day because none of us are perfect. And so what can we do to get better? I was just talking to someone just recently about a book. I can't call its last name. Atomic. You guys may know that name.
Atomic Habits.
Atomic Habits, I believe. And it talks about getting 1% better every day. And if you can do that, I think you're 37% better after a course of a year. But so you don't lower your standards, but you have to have flexibility. I think today, one of the, you know, we talk a lot about our managers loving their team members, and by loving their team members from a verb perspective, from an action perspective, what's an everyday action that they can do to love their team? And one is provide them flexibility. You know, I'll pick on JT here. I mean, JT is a phenomenal creative within our bank and our marketing department. And, you know, JT may come in at 11 o'clock in a given day, or he may work from home during that day, but he also may be up at 3 a.m. because he knows he's got to get something done. He may be up working to get that done. And I'm not suggesting, you know, our people get up at 3 a.m. and work, but the point is that you have to meet the team member where they are and provide them flexibility. I think that's one of the keys. And but you also have to keep the standard high and, you know, create an environment of accountability so that the job gets done as well. So, yeah, we had to do a lot of that through COVID. Even before COVID, we were migrating to some of this type of work at home environment. I think COVID was just a catalyst that showed us that, you know, any fears we had that this could be done, because at the time, you know, you had no choice, right? So yeah. I think it just sped things up a little bit.
Yeah, it's like go work from home because you have to, but now it's, hey, nothing, you know, that wasn't so bad. Like we can support this. And
exactly.
You know, if somebody wants to, there's no reason to be at your desk, you know, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, just by default.
If
you need that flexibility to live a more fulfilled life, and you'll be more productive when you are, you know, you are working, whether that's, you know, 3 in the morning, because that suits your clock, or, you know, whether it's in the office. So,
right. You know, I do feel, and what we do at our bank is we try to gather as frequently as we can, you know, at least once a quarter, maybe even monthly, in person. I do think this is just my opinion, I'm not saying this can't be done, but if you are 100% of the time completely remote, you really have to work diligently at maintaining cohesiveness. And you go back to connection, that word connection. Connection occurs when people get to know each other. They understand each other's whys. They get to know each other's families. They're in the trenches together, if you will. And that is, it can be done for sure, but it's much, much harder to do. You have to be much more intentional to pull that off in a complete remote type working environment. So we have a hybrid approach where we do want the team to gather. We want them to come in. We want them to see each other. And believe it or not, they desire that. I mean, they all like it. But at the same time, I think if you pound your fist on the desk and say, you know, you've got to be here Monday through Friday, you know, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. in your office, I mean, you're not meeting a team member at where they are, and your engagement level will drop, and I think you'll lose people.
I think that's important breakaways from the old traditional banking, you know, model. And, you know, because things have changed, maybe some of what the opportunities around COVID have done for all of us is to kind of push us in those directions that you described, Neil, and to be a little less of that, for lack of a better way to say it, that non-traditional approach, and that it's not punching a clock from 9 to 5 anymore. So,
right.
And I've got to ask you about this. I didn't want to fail to not spend a little bit of time on this as well, because you talked about leadership. So one of the key elements as being a leader, like you say, regardless of where you fall on the org chart, it's still about leadership. But one of the key elements of that is personal development, taking care of self, you know, so that I've often heard it by a mentor described this way by a mentor of mine, is putting my own mask on first. And so sometimes that feels a little contrary to me as a person of faith and as a person who tries to be selfless and others focused, that I've got to take care of me first. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, as an individual and as a professional and as the CEO of a marketing agency and all, I do have to take care of myself, or I'm not going to be able to show up as the kind of leader that you describe. So whether, you know, that's different for all of us, right? I mean, you know, for me, it's a routine of kind of like you. I know you're very much a fitness enthusiast, but I've got some fitness mixed in there. I've got some devotional time mixed in there. I've got some, you know, prioritizing time with family, those kinds of things that are in there. So what does that look like for you a bit, Neil? And then, you know, how do you suggest or espouse that to others on your team?
That is a really great, poignant question that you asked, and you're so right. The first thing I thought about when you talked about, you know, the leader has to care for himself or herself, you know, as well, or else you're not, you know, you'll burn out or whatever the case may be. I was a paramedic back in college, during my college years. And I remember in paramedic school, they taught us whenever there was a gunshot wound or a shooting, even though someone may have been shot, don't go into that scene until it's safe. So let the cops get there because they're trained on managing that type of environment because they said a dead paramedic is no good for anyone. So equating it back, I mean, if I don't take care of myself and have time for me, I'm not going to be an effective leader because my batteries will run down. I'll probably get cranky. My judgment won't be as good. You know, for me, Chris and Dan, and everyone's different. Certainly my, you know, exercise and fitness, and I've, you know, I do that early in the morning. That's a way to clear my mind and kind of get my day off to a good start. It's energizing to me. But also, I put margins in my calendar. So I put buffers in there that, you know, won't allow me to overcommit. And I've been doing that for probably the last 10 or 15 years, and that's made a drastic difference. And so if someone says, you know, you got to be, you know, what do you got going on Friday at X amount of time? If it's past that buffer time, you know, I don't overschedule. So I think that's number one. Another thing that I learned from a former Georgia head football coach, Mark Richt, who's actually a very good personal friend of mine. I see him every couple of weeks. I took some advice from him, and he said when he was coaching here that when he went to work, there was a landmark that he would pass on his way. And through Athens, there's a loop. It's called Loop 10. And he said when he got on the loop, he said his going to work, his mind focused on the day and football and everything that he had to get done. He said, I was 100% focused. He said, you know, at 6 or 7 in the evening or whatever time that we left, he said, I would pass that landmark going home. And he said, boom, I would shift my, you know, thinking back to, you know, being at home with the family and not, you know, not getting my mind on, you know, issues and things that I have going at work. Now, in a perfect environment, I think that works really, really well. I think there's times when that's hard to accomplish, but that's helped me as well. But, you know, was it Stephen Covey who talked about sharpening the saw? I think in one of his 7 habits, it just came to mind, you know, you got to sharpen the saw. And so if you're sawing all day and working and not taking time to sharpen your skills, sharpen your, you know, whether it's your physical rest and mental state, whatever it is, I mean, you'll become dull and not be as effective.
Yeah. A quote comes to mind of somebody told me, like, and if you're always doing your best, right? Your best is your average, right? And that sounds bad on the surface, but you know, it means it's like, you can't always do your best. You've got to take, you know, you can't run at 150 miles an hour all day long. You've got to take those little breaks, and right, then you've got to be you know, easy on yourself if something doesn't go the way you want. You're learning from those things. And, you know, so I think about that where, like, you might feel, you pass that landmark and you start thinking about family, but maybe there was a lot going on that day. You could end up feeling guilty that you're not spending more time on it. But if you don't take that time with family, it's adding to your stress, and it's adding to, you know, adding to the stuff that's going to make you less productive when you get.
That's right. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of family time. I had someone years ago, a mentor of mine, looked at me and he said, I was a young area executive running a market for another bank, and I went to a sales conference, an awards banquet, and he looked around. He said, Stevens, he said, you're doing a great job down there in Atlanta. He said, but I want you to look around this room. And I looked around the room and I said, yes, sir. He said, you see all these people at this conference? I said, yes, sir. He said, there ain't a single one of them is going to be feeding you pudding in the nursing home when you're 90 years old. He said, that's going to be your family. He said, you don't ever forget to put them first. And I've never forgotten that, you know, so that's
important. Love that. Yeah, very true. Very true. Well, yeah. and to hear an SEC football coach, you know, even at that level of human performance and expected performance, you know, to draw a line in the sand that you cross and into your professional life and then cross back into your personal life. And yeah, I mean, in this day and age of technology, things are still going to blow us up, you know, and the things going on. But if you have that as your standard, I guess, and Dan, you know, you and Neil both use the word standard, you know, but if you have that as your standard performance, then, you know, you're on the right track rather than just going, oh, well, I'm just busy all the time. And that doesn't play out as well.
Well, think about workouts. You know, you're into fitness. And I mean, many times with workouts, less is more. Meaning, you know, yeah, you work out hard when you're working out. I mean, if you don't, you won't get the results. You got to be strict with your diet. You got to do all those things. But also rest, right? The time that you're not working out, when you're giving your heart the rest, when you're giving your muscles the break, that's when the growth occurs. And so if you just were to go to the gym 7 days a week, 3 times a day, you're not going to get the same level of results if you did, you know, 4 times a week. Worked out hard while you're there, but then give your body the appropriate chance to heal and rest. Same thing with, I think, work-life balance. Same thing holds true.
Yeah. Well, Neil, you the other thing that I got to hear from you and engage with you about recently at the conference, and congratulations, by the way, as the incoming chair of the board for the CBA of Georgia. And
thank you.
I know that is both an honor and an important role for you, and everybody involved is lucky to have you in that. But my wife and I sat there and got to listen to you sharing your vision and thoughts. And by the way, kudos, because one of the coolest things that you've done to me is that you've written a book, and it's not yet on the New York Times bestseller list.
Give it a couple of weeks, maybe.
Yeah. But what you've recounted to me several times is that your purpose in doing that was for your team.
Yeah,
you weren't doing that for acclimation or to sell a bunch
Correct.
Of books or whatever. And I got to tell you, man, I've thought about that several times over the last few weeks and thought, well, now how cool is that? Because writing a book is hard. I mean, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of, you even mentioned to me, you know, that how challenging that was, but that you did that for your team, it is really a cool thing. But what I loved about what you shared at the conference, Neil, was the four principles of leading life on life is the name of your book and the core of some of what that's about. So will you share some about those principles with us?
Sure, absolutely. And yeah, it was written for the team, and we have a foundation. We're going to put it on our foundation website, and whoever wants to make a donation to the foundation, we'll give the book to them for the cost of the book. We're not even attempting to try to make any money on it. I always say, my goal is to be faithful, not famous. And I think if we can just be faithful to the cause, that's the most important thing. And I felt compelled for the last couple of years that we need a consistent operating system within the bank by which we lead and by which we train our leaders. And so that was what created it. And I just looked at 34 years of my career and things that I'd learned from, you know, some of the best leaders that I've ever worked for, and observing leaders who are incredible leaders, and what are some common themes that they do, things that are they all have in common, character traits that they have in common and such. And so that was sort of how this came about. Leading Life on Life is a title, and really what that means is, you know, a leader can flash into someone's life and flash back out, and they can show up and say hello, and then they can go away. But leading life on life means there needs to be a very intense intentionality about investing in others and investing in your team. That doesn't mean you become best friends and, you know, you do all the stuff after work or stuff like that. I mean, you know, you doesn't necessarily mean any of that, but it does mean that you get to know your team at a deeper level and you go through life with them because, you know, just like we talked about earlier, they're going to have family struggles. They're going to have business struggles. If you, you know, we need to be coaching our teams. We need to be making them better. And so that was really the impetus for doing this. And so the four principles are really quite simple. It's the number one, love others. And there's another great book out that inspired this particular section called Love Works. It's by Joel Manby. And he's a Harvard MBA. He ran SeaWorld. He was on Undercover Boss. He actually ran Hirsch and Family Entertainment, which is Dollywood and Stone Mountain and all these big theme parks. And he's a turnaround guy. But he says that if you put the principles of love to work in a business, it's remarkable what will happen in terms of performance and connection that we talked about earlier. So loving others is the very first thing, and loving your team. And there's 8 everyday actions in the book that we can, you know, do to demonstrate love to our team. The second is equip others, equip our team. And that's to give them the tools and the training they need to prepare them for whatever skill they need to be successful. And I think so many times we throw our people into situations and we give them no training, no equipping, no coaching. We just expect them to figure it out. And you referenced that earlier in your comments. Then the third principle is to affirm others. And if you think about that word affirm, it really has to do with accountability, but it's the positive side of the coin of accountability, meaning that affirming someone is really demonstrating to them that they need to take ownership of their own actions. And I think you hold them accountable to taking ownership of their actions by affirming. You know, you encourage and you demonstrate empathy as they do that. You focus on their strengths. But certainly in that process, results matter. And but I think you get a lot more, make a lot more progress by affirming than you do saying, you know, I'm going to hold you accountable to doing this, 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 and this, because that all automatically becomes somewhat of a negative tone. And then finally, the fourth point is to develop our team, develop others. And you think, well, you know, equipping and developing, you know, are similar. Well, I see equipping more is focused on the skill and developing focused more on the person. And every team member wants to be developed both personally and professionally. And so if you take that acronym, it spells LEAD, L-E-A-D, pretty simple, but it's a 90-some-odd page book, and the primary reason for it is, like I say, is to get our team thinking consistently as it relates to leading each other and leading their teams. So I try to take those principles, and we're going to be using those same principles at the CBA for our member banks as well. So.
Neil, it's interesting too, in a business context, to lead those with love. To many, I guess, just generally in business, may not sound like, oh no, you got to lead with training, or you got to lead with, you know, whatever. And you know, to have that as the initial and core principle for connectivity and people that are, yes, working together and hopefully as a team rowing in the same direction with the bank or the agency or whatever, you know, the case may be, is really interesting to me and resounded with me and kind of looking at what is it that my team needs first and foremost as a foundational part of working together, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not those tangibles, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not equipping the equipment, it's equipping the people. It's so I love the basis for so many of your points in those principles.
Really, well, you know, great. You talk about love. About over a third of the book is devoted to that section, loving others, and we try to take, there's more, but we took 8 everyday action steps that a team can do to, or a leader can do to demonstrate love to his or her team. And I think really when you look at the statistical evidence, the main reason people leave an organization is their leader, and they don't feel cared for. They don't feel appreciated. They feel undervalued. And, you know, yeah, you got to hold them to a standard for sure. You got to hire correctly. Sometimes loving others means making a hard decision, you know, showing a little bit of tough love. But, you know, what's it, the old Zig Ziglar quote, I believe, from years ago, is people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And it really boils down to, how do you demonstrate that in a way that you truly care for your team members? And I think that takes their performance to a whole new level. You certainly can get performance without loving. I mean, that's been proven. But I don't think you leave a legacy that way. You may have a flash of success, but I don't think you can build long-term sustainable legacies if that's not a major component. And that's why so much time was spent on that particular part of the book.
Yeah, people want to belong. I'm long time had the philosophy of, you know, if I'm going to spend this much time at work, right, like away from my family, away from hobbies and, you know, and other things, then, you know, I want to be in an accepting environment, an environment that's going to help me develop, that's going to help me do all those, you know, all those things you just
absolutely. You know, one of the action steps is, you know, rewards and recognition. You know, we often say what gets recognized gets repeated, what gets rewarded gets repeated. And, you know, that's certainly recognition of, you know, attaboys and public recognition and things like that. They go so far, but it's also compensation. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, our team's here to earn a paycheck, earn a living. You know, if that's the sole reason someone's here, there's probably a short-lived career just because there's always greener grass when it comes to, you know, making more money somewhere else. And if that's all they're chasing, you know, that's a different story. But at the same time, that's an important part of the equation. So you can demonstrate love through that in a major way. So.
You know, there, man, this is such a deep pool to swim in too, Neil. I know that I watched you in both instances at that conference and kind of unfortunately ran into a time block of, man, we could talk about this stuff all day. And I saw the audience absorbed in these topics that we've gotten to cover again today about connection, certainly, and how all this feeds into our teams and our professional lives. And you know, and also the loving and equipping and developing and these principles that we can do. I did not want to fail to mention to our listeners that we will have all of this in our show notes and accessibility to this information, and we'll be able to share it as well. So if those that are listening are thirsty, good. We'll have more for you in the show notes as well. And man, there's so much good stuff, Neil, and I knew that there would be.
That's awesome, and I appreciate it, and it's been an honor to be part of this. One last comment that I will make as it relates to connection, that connectivity we talked about, and that's in the book as well. It's the last chapter, and it's the glue. Connection is the glue that holds the loving, equipping, affirming, and developing. It holds it together. Without connection, I think it all falls apart. And so both literally and figuratively there. So, but thank you guys. This has been awesome. Thank you for what you do, the impact that you guys make using this podcast. I've listened to several episodes, and I'd encourage the listeners to go back and listen to the other episodes, man. It's an awesome podcast, and I just really appreciate the chance to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Neil. We're not going to let you escape quite that easily, because we've got these little our fun way of closing this as well. Either Dan or I will toss out. So we'll ask you some fun questions for a lightning round here.
Awesome, I love it.
Yeah. All right. We'll jump in here. The first one: share a kind of personal best, business best, something great that's happened.
Personal best would have to be marrying my bride 35 years ago. We're about to celebrate 35th anniversary here in December. But we were together for 5 years before that. So we've been together for almost 40 years. And she, by far, that's the personal best I've ever done right there. So business best. We just recently made an acquisition of a great little savings and loan up in Elberton, Georgia, which is about 40 minutes to our northeast. And just the collaboration of all parties coming together, our bank, their team, it's just been incredible to watch the connectedness, as we talked about earlier, in collaboration. And it was a long process because it had to go through the regulators. It was a very complicated transaction. It took 2 years to get approved, but we kept the faith. And that's certainly a business best, I would say.
Great. All right. What's you mentioned a couple in this episode already, but what's, if you had to pick one, what's your favorite book?
Oh, my gosh. Good to Great with Jim Collins is there, but probably a close second is The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath. I don't know if you've read that book, but it talks about creating moments that are memorable. A great read if you haven't read it.
Good to Great, definitely familiar with, but that one I haven't.
Power of Moments.
Love new recommendations.
It's a bestseller. It's a big time book. You would enjoy it.
You've given out a lot of advice on this podcast also, but what's the most impactful piece of advice you've gotten from someone else?
You know, a mentor of mine shared an Einstein quote with me a number of years ago that's always stuck with me. And you think about Einstein, he's a math, you know, none of us would argue that he's not good at math, right? And Einstein said, and this is what my mentor, that's how I learned this, is he shared it with me, but Einstein said, not everything that can be counted counts, and not everything that counts can be counted. And when you think about that, it's like, kind of goes back to that nursing home, you know, who's going to be there for you at the end of life sort of deal. But not everything that can be counted counts, and not everything that counts can be counted. Probably some of the best advice I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's pretty, especially, I mean, it's great, but especially interesting in thinking about in the banking context when
yes.
It's all right. Numbers. It's all, you know, it's all.
And counts. Einstein it being the, you know, known for mathematics. So,
yeah. All right. And flipping that around, you've given some of this out on this episode too, but what's kind of like the top piece of advice you find telling your staff or customers?
Yeah. We talk about this often. Within our company, and that is what's on the walls, we must live in the halls. Meaning that our vision, mission, values has to become part of our DNA. It has to become part of who we are. It can't just be words on a wall. Those things have to be lived in the halls, meaning that they have to become part of who we are if we're really to achieve our vision, mission, value as a company. So that's probably one of the things we say the most around our organization.
Hmm. All right. Well, the last one's the softball bet. How can people learn more about your book, get in touch with you? What kind of resources or you know, sites, emails, that type of stuff do you want to share?
Sure. I mean, the best way, of course, we have a website, www.oconeestatebank.com. We have a foundation that can be found on that website and kind of see what we're doing in the community. But email me, Neil N. Stevens at OconeeStateBank.com. That's OConeE, OconeeStateBank.com. And love to hear from you.
We'll definitely do that. And for sure, we'll link to both of those, but the foundation in particular in our show notes, Neil, so that folks can check out the book, can support the foundation's effort and all of those things. So would love to share that with our listeners and have them jump in and as well and take so much great stuff that we've gone over today and be able to share that with their teams, utilize it in their own lives.
Yeah. One more thing too, that we just started, and that's what you guys are doing. We actually have a podcast and it can be seen on video. And we've had some, we've used it predominantly to bring in prospects of ours and things of that nature. But you can find that on our website as well. So that's another way to connect.
Awesome. We'll check that out too.
Great. Well, Thank you. This has been great. Got me thinking.
Big time. That's what we're trying to do. That's right, Neil, is to get others thinking and getting to connect with you at the conference. Certainly has gotten me thinking, and really an honor to have you on here with us as well. Can't thank you enough. Looking forward to having some time with my spouse and family and yours, and look forward to some fun, some connection time there as well.
Same here.
Yep. And Dan, we appreciate it. Man, this is always a great one. We've got, I know, some other great guests coming up looking into some of our fall episodes and all that. So invite everyone to check us out at bankmarketingshow.com if you have not already, and can follow Neil's and many of the other episodes that he mentioned for us as well.
All right, guys. Y'all have been great. Thank you so much. Enjoyed it.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for joining us. To go deeper or get access to some of the valuable nuggets from today's show, go to bankmarketingshow.com. There you'll find episodes, links to resources, and much more. Be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts, and join us next time.